it ready for the unmapped, the untraversed, and the unpredictable. Get ready for the unbodied science fiction radio theater. This episode is titled Only by Night and was written by Jeff Sink.
Ian released his finger from the button, sending the distress signal on its way 10,000 miles into space. The engineers of the observation module had designed the system so that if help were needed, a signal had to be manually produced and sent out. It would have been terribly costly for one of the other stations to receive something, sent out by a malfunctioning ops system or a jittery custodian, and travel the extreme distance for a rescue mission all over a false call. Ian had no fear of wasting the other module custodian's time. He wasn't even sure they were there. It began 24 hours earlier, with silence. No signal from the other observation modules, the five stations spread out in a line at the edge of the solar system collecting scientific data. No word from the other five people he'd spoken to every day cycle for nearly a year. More silence as Ian waited the 20 minutes for the hailing signal to be acknowledged. Silence as he went about his duties, performing routine safety checks and analyzing data streaming in from the probes. Silence when, later than usual, he abandoned the communications console to retire to his bunk. Silence as he pondered whether to chronicle the event in his journal, as if writing about it made it more real. "Something might have happened," he wrote, waiting for more information. The night cycle passed with no alert about a possible response. That was when Ian found himself back at the communications console, sending out the distress signal. He left ops for the mess room to have breakfast. The glass wall that spanned the entire left side of the module shimmered with a glowing representation of the morning sun reigning over a pristine beach, which changed into a crisp forest and then a park. "My artificial sunrise," he thought. "But does this represent the sun, the Earth's sun, or is it from somewhere else?" He was sure the engineers had intended for it to remind Ian of Earth, but out here the distinction seemed increasingly arbitrary. It could have been the Earth's sun, or some other star from some other system, neither of which were very relevant to Ian. He existed in the blind ocean of space. After his meal, Ian did what he had been trained to do in a situation like this: consult the emergency protocol. Its advice was not exactly comforting to him, however. An automated diagnostics check failed to find anything wrong with the equipment, and he was forbidden from manually inspecting anything, for fear he'd exacerbate the problem. His supplies were not contaminated, and he himself was healthy. The solution, then, was to continue his usual duties and wait for word from the other modules. In reality, it was the only sensible solution. This wasn't a job he could just walk away from, put in his 2 weeks' notice and leave. And apart from the modules, the closest people to rescue him sat orbiting the Earth. It would take well over a decade for his distress signals to reach there. He was stuck. The emergency protocol offered to print out a checklist of concerning psychological symptoms for Ian to review, but he declined. He returned to his duties. At the end of his shift, he sat down to his journal. What happened to them? Did some asteroids impact the other modules? But if so, why wasn't his module damaged? He was right in the middle of them. They could have issues with their communications consoles, but all five at once? That seemed unlikely. Other wilder explanations filled his mind, but he tried to ignore them. He began thinking about the other custodians, all the conversations via the console, and the things they'd shared with one another. He started to write down some of the stories, but it felt too much like writing an obituary, so he stopped. "It's funny," he wrote, "that on Earth you must flee the 30 million other people in the city to feel truly alone. Here, it's only five." He put his journal away. Ian began marking each day cycle that he failed to hear from the others. The number grew each time he opened his journal. A week passed, or, to be more precise, 168 hours passed. He maintained his schedule, wondering whether anyone would ever see all the data he was gathering. He kept the module clean. He took all of his prescribed breaks, and in the night cycle he wrote in his journal the things he would have told the others. In the past he might have spared some space to write about what he thought was going on back on Earth, but since the silence it had seemed less important. His mind narrowed to focus on the goings-on inside the module only. He began to descend into a mechanical cycle of work, eat, sleep, repeat, which served to deaden his mind. One night, about a month after losing contact, however, his routine got disrupted. At first, Ian simply laughed. There was a quality to the entire place. The gold grass leaning in the breeze, carpeting the hills folded between the gray mountains. It reminded him of the color of cheese, American or cheddar, and he shook his head at how, in such a place as this, he had thought of cheese. The sky, the color of a turquoise marble, rose into infinity. He walked through the grass, tripping on a stone hidden by dry, brittle brush. The sun baked his skin, and he began to sweat. The screeching of cicadas rose and fell around him. Some time into his trek, he came upon a cottonwood tree, its muscular trunk pushing into the sky. The leaves flapped in the wind, sunlight slipping between them every so often, creating a dance of light and shadow on the ground. White fluff from the tree descended, clinging to the grass and Ian's clothing. He lay there, in the dust beneath the tree. The filtered sound of wind rushing about came to him. Then he heard a buzz. His body jerked, and he opened his eyes to see the display reading 0800 hours. He stared at it, convinced it might disappear at any moment. It didn't, and neither did the perpetual hum of the biological maintenance systems. Ian lay in bed, sobbing. That day cycle, performing his duties was excruciating. Every inch of the module reminded him where he was and where he was not. At 1200 hours, the artificial sun appeared to taunt Ian. He gave it one sustained look before lifting an armchair and hurling it at his cheerful bully. The glass wobbled and then returned to its original position. He got only partway through reviewing the information from the probes when, disgusted, he returned to his journal. Into it he included everything he could remember about the dream. He looked it over, reliving the experience once again. Ian retired early that day cycle, hoping to slip back into the valley. After several night cycles of jumbled, anxiety-ridden dreams, Ian began thinking. It wasn't good to hold on to this dream. It was too painful, like thinking about rescue or hearing from the others. He had to let it go. On that day cycle, he completed all of his tasks, including the ones he'd neglected before. He passed over the portion of his journal that included the description of the valley, and he wrote about the increase in solar wind as registered by the equipment. More time passed, and he found himself in the valley once again. He wandered along the wild land, through the loping foothills before attempting access into the steep, jagged mountains. He felt the soreness in his legs as he contorted over the boulders. He didn't get too far before he awoke. This time he didn't cry. He lay in his bunk, eyes shut, reimagining every bit of the valley he'd seen. When he'd exhausted his memory, he went to his journal and began drawing. He might become frustrated with a lack of accuracy in the illustrations, only to erase the entire thing and start over. To Ian, everything needed to be true to the dream. An alert from Ops informed him that the probes had returned, and that he was late in logging in for the day cycle, but he ignored it. Once he had finished the drawings, he went to work. The daily distress call was sent, and the probes attended to. He performed with perfect diligence, but in the back of his mind he continued to wonder when the next visit to the valley would be. Another bad night. Ian tried not to think about his disappointment the next day cycle. At the beginning, it was easy to push away all thoughts of the valley and focus. As the hours passed, however, his longing to return expanded, preoccupying him. He reviewed the drawings and descriptions in his journal before lying down, trying to keep his mind quiet enough to fall asleep. His dreams were amorphous, time and again, until at the end of one shift he slipped back into the valley. In the morning, he speculated on what might have triggered the dream, whether lying in a certain position helped, or thinking about the valley, or not thinking about it. In his journal, he began keeping track of the number of days between visits. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 days before returning. 1, 2, 3, 4 days, and he was back. There seemed to be no pattern. Each morning, after a visit, he would record as many details as he could remember, and his sleeping quarters filled with drawings. Diagnostics checks originally meant to be completed each day cycle were pushed to once a week or less. Instead, Ian planned out his next trip to the valley. "Must remember to explore the ravine at the southeast corner of Mount Ash," he wrote. With time, his map of the valley grew. Some areas were spotty, as it seemed he didn't always begin in the same place. Ian would spend hours estimating what those unexplored places were like. One day cycle, 3 months after discovering the valley, Ian received notification that the probes had returned. He disregarded it, and the basketball-sized machines sat comatose in their holding bays from that point on. He was the probe now, searching out and discovering the valley. It wasn't much longer before Ian stopped sending out the distress signals as well. There was more going on in here than outside, he thought. He passed the glass wall, clothed in drawings of the valley, and returned to his journal, trying to remember more about the grove of quaking aspens he'd found on the south slope of Mount Ash. Ian woke in the middle of the night cycle, after a dreamless sleep. It had been 94 days since he'd been to the valley. This was the longest he'd ever gone, and with every day cycle that passed, Ian became more irritated and uncomfortable. He couldn't go more than 5 minutes without considering something he might be doing wrong, some action that might have prevented him from going to the valley. He'd consulted his maps, writings, and illustrations, but hadn't found any insight. There had to have been more to see, he thought. This can't be it. He'd spent all of his awake time tormented by anticipation, and while he slept, there was no relief. Finally, he'd given himself an ultimatum. 5 more day cycles of waiting, and then he would rupture the nuclear canisters on the bottom of the module and incinerate everything. It seemed to be the only way to escape his torment, and in a few hours, he'd have to go through with it. Ian got out of his bed and began pacing. He gingerly stepped over the papers littering the room, filled with words like higher elevation, underground well, and recent rainfall. The valley seemed distant to him now, as distant as Earth had felt before the silence. Maybe, he thought, they were all in the same place, Earth, the valley, and the others, where they might not have ever existed. The module, stark and confining, had been the only consistent thing in Ian's life. He knew it was really there. He went to the ops room, where beneath more drawings, a display flashed warnings. 4,080 hours since contact with the other observation modules. 1,967 hours since daily maintenance checks had been performed. Below that, the system had made an observation and a recommendation. Biological presence still detected aboard module. Please log in. Ian walked away. He looked around and went to his journal. He didn't know what to write. I don't know what I'll miss, he thought, because I don't know where I'm going. And I don't have regrets. I simply handled the situation as best I could. He rubbed his face. I don't feel anything, except... His eyes wandered to a clock. 0300 hours. Still some time, he thought. He yawned, his eyelids becoming heavy. Yeah, there's still some time yet. I don't have to do this until the morning. He returned to his bunk, where he promptly fell asleep. The wind on his face seemed to fill Ian with energy. He squinted, barely able to perceive the faintest outline of a canyon from his vantage on top of Mount Ash. Extending his legs, he hopped down from the stone ledge he'd been sitting on and began his descent back to the valley.
You've just heard Only by Night, another story of the Unbodied. Want more of the Unbodied? Go to theunbodied.com. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.